Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, and my co-host is Adam Wybury. Today we're talking about part two of the Goosebumps TV series from 2023. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Good evening, Adam.
Good evening, Ren.
Are you ready to talk about some ventriloquism dummies?
I'm always ready to talk about ventriloquism. Obviously, you can. This is a podcast, so you can't see how brilliant that was in terms of my not moving my lips.
I know.
So the listener can but imagine the perfect ventriloquism.
Yeah, one of your many skills. Haven't mentioned it because there's so many.
I don't get to do it at school. Actually, the puppet the puppet I was using got taken away from me by the head of English and hid in a drawer. That is actually true. Yeah, I know. It's outrageous. We got one of the English teachers was like gifted a puppet and she didn't want to use it, and obviously I was not going to let this puppet go unused. It's a big felt puppet. So I brought him along to my base group and asked the kids what they wanted to name him. And they settled on Krueger after Freddy Krueger. Not that he resembled Freddy, but that's fine. I used him for encouraging reticent students to recite Shakespeare. So I was like, okay, will you read a part? And they'd say no. And I say, well, will you read it if you get to do it with Krueger on your hand and Krueger can read the part? And they're like, yeah, right.
But why did the head of English?
Oh, because he was quite humorless, to be honest. And he was like, no, it's not necessary for you to be using. You don't need these kind of bells and whistles. I was like, well, it is pretty entertaining. And I did read a study that shows that things are more memorable if they're entertaining. It's like, no, it's not conclusive, those studies. You do not need to have the puppet. And I basically ignored him and kept using the puppet. And then I turned up one day and Krueger had disappeared. And I'd thought that maybe one of the kids had nicked him. But no, it turned out he was discovered months later, hidden in like a cupboard or a drawer in the English office. And then given to reception. So he sat in reception for a little bit and I don't know where he is now.
Oh. that's very charming, but tragic ending. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Well, that was Krueger's origin story, but the first episode we returned to halfway through our Goosebumps relaunch 2-episode mini series is a Slappy's origin story, because we have Night of the Living Dummy, which is one of the most famous Goosebumps books, but as far as I could see, the actual episode doesn't exist. So in the original series, there isn't a Night of the Living Dummy?
What?
Yeah. No, I really had to look into this, and, there were debates about whether this would be, like, prohibitively expensive or something. There is a Return of the Living Dummy episode. And this must be one of the only times that a TV show has adapted a sequel, right, but not the original thing.
Okay, well, I guess unwittingly thematically, I haven't read the original Night of the Living Dummy, but I did read Night of the Living Dummy 2, so...
Wow, it's almost like it was deliberate.
Yeah. Night of the Living Dummy 2 came bundled with Say Cheese and Die in a double bill of book, so, yeah.
But, yeah, this episode's... It's quite an ambitious start to the episode. We get Slappy's origin story, and it brings us from the 1920s through to the 1960s, and with it, the rise and fall of vaudevillian stage performance.
Yeah. Yeah, so the where we'd left it is the kids, the teens, had just realised that their parents had maybe killed Harold Biddle, and so Brat comes out of his house, the teacher who's been possessed by Biddle, and says, "Do you want to hear what really happened? Like, come in and I'll tell you." And so he's telling them this story that, yeah, as you say, covers his great-grandfather, Ephraim Bratt, being a down-on-his-luck ventriloquist who finds Slappy and his fortunes turn around through this mean-talking dummy.
And I have to say, so we've mentioned Harold Biddle before. He is the tortured teen from the 90s, sort of I guess Gen Xer, is he, rather than a millennial, I suppose?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe on the cusp. And he must be the angstiest Proclaimers fan who ever lived, because this is the second time we hear him singing happily along to a Proclaimers song. And I do wonder if that's one of his issues, that he clearly never actually discovered, like, Radiohead or the Smashing Pumpkins or The Cure. Maybe if he'd actually heard some of those more angsty bands, he would have been able to get some catharsis, right? But he was stuck just listening to the Proclaimers.
Yeah, very jaunty choice.
Very, very jaunty.
Yeah, I've actually been playing 500 Miles on the drums because it's a good bouncy drum line. Yeah.
But yeah, I do wonder if that was his main issue, really.
Well, I mean, the thing that we see in this episode is that he was a very sweet kid.
He was an earnest kid.
Yeah. Before he got influenced by Slappy. In this sort of backstory, we see that Slappy's trying to, like, get Ephraim to read some more magic words, you know, to complete his plan of some kind, and it kind of Ephraim starts reading them and sees this vision of this kind of big burning wooden helter skelter, and he gets freaked out and he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. So he stuffs Slappy in a suitcase and buys this house in Port Lawrence, which is the Biddle house, and bricks Slappy in a suitcase into the walls. And then in 1993, when the Biddles move in, Slappy starts whispering from the walls in the basement where Harold's hanging out with his worms and his sketchbook and his Proclaimers albums.
And it starts, as you say, Slappy gets inside his head and... Basically, he starts becoming quite paranoid, and he's not actually... So I found this quite interesting, and I don't know if it brings up... If you read too much into it, it seems a little uncomfortable to me. So he starts basically seeing people as really getting at him, but actually, he's not especially bullied. I did wonder if there was a kind of retrospective, were 90s victims of bullying... really bullied, because I do feel like, you know, it's not been as present recently, but I do remember, you know, a few years back, quite a few articles, understandable in the wake of like Gamergate, right, about sort of toxic male geeks and nerds. And read stuff recently, and again, this came up actually a while back, it's just it's something I encountered again this week, about the idea of bullying as a net social good, which, like, obviously I completely disagree with, really adamantly. But, you know, the idea that, that bullying, you know, really kind of keeps aberrant behaviour in check, and actually the kids who get bullied, well, on some level, they are asking for it.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You know, yeah. By, I don't know, I wondered if there's a bit of that in this episode, that Harold Biddle, he doesn't really get bullied. He gains a bit of negative attention, right? And that's only after Slappy's kind of causing him to behave in quite an odd and often quite unpleasant fashion. I don't know. I don't. It might be that they're not trying to say anything with it, to be honest. But I did find it a bit odd.
I kind of more got the impression that he had been really badly bullied in his previous school, and that affected his perspective of it.
Okay, so he's like being hypervigilant, basically.
Yeah, I think that was more the angle I thought they were going for.
Okay, that makes sense. But there's very little focus on the main cast in this episode. You know, they're basically the audience stand-in for this episode, making a few kind of snarky Zoomer comments on Harold's tale.
We kind of see sort of Harold's parents get increasingly disturbed by his attachment to Slappy and the change in his behaviour, and they try to burn Slappy while Harold's away, and they like pushed him into the fireplace, and they said, "We'll just tell him it got too close to the fire, and then we'll buy him a car." which is like reasonable plan, I guess, but it doesn't work. Slappy doesn't burn, Harold does the spell that turns people into puppets, which we see, which we see happen earlier in the flashback. And he turns his parents into puppet people.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat effect. Like the puppet prosthetics are quite good.
I
think
it's done well.
You know, like the transformation's obviously achieved digitally, but then you've got some nice sort of practical makeup effects when they are puppet people, and they look pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously it's quite an exposition-y episode, but it does show more than it tells, I suppose. Like, it's an enjoyable episode. I don't think it... I mean, one of the issues I have with this reboot is simply the episode lengths, which is kind of a demand of, I guess... I mean, you know, you do still get 20-minute episodes of streaming television, but I suppose, like, 40 minutes or more is the norm now. And the thing with the original Goosebumps is, however, like, janky it very often is, it does have a very... It's just stuffed with, you know, with frights and chills and stupid little cliffhangers. I just like how cram-packed a lot of the original Goosebumps episodes are. You know, and it's not like they're cram-packed with quality necessarily, but you get a lot of bang for your buck for 20 minutes. Whereas I'm not that fussed by the teen drama aspects of this. Like, the characters are nice enough and the performances are all decent, but I'm not really invested enough in them as characters to care too much about their relationship drama.
Yeah.
So there are times where I do get a bit bored and I think, oh, come on, I just want, you know, maybe I'm just too much of a kid, really. I'm just too, you know, I just, feelings, relationship drama. No, I just want worms and an evil dummy. But that is basically that is basically how I feel.
You're the kid in The Princess Bride complaining to Peter Falk. Right? Is there kissing?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I agree. It's not. It's, yeah.
But yeah. It's a decent episode, though. And obviously, in terms of comparisons, it automatically wins against the non-existent original Night of the Living Dead. Because yeah, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Dude, I wonder what happens in the original book.
I definitely read it. I'm pretty sure I did. I just remember Slappy gets up to some tricks, really. I do think Slappy's more, I don't say mischievous. He's meant to be evil, but like the stakes are quite lower or feel lower, I think. It's less sort of cosmic. Yeah. Like Slappy doesn't have some grand plan. As far as I remember, he's just an evil dummy that causes trouble.
Yeah.
And I swear that in one of the books, they defeat him by pushing him onto his back. I'm sure of this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to believe you. It didn't happen in Night of Living Dummy 2, but I hope it does happen.
Unless this was something I imagined. I mean, it's possible I imagined this as a kid to reassure myself. Like, you know, maybe it's like, oh my God, if I was confronted by Slappy, it's okay. I could just push him onto his back and I'd be safe. So maybe this was just me lying to myself to try to avoid facing up to the real danger embodied by Slappy.
Yeah. It's like some of those, like on Robot Wars, you know, some of those robots, if you push them onto their back,
they were just flipped onto their back.
They couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I loved the best designs in Robot Wars were always the ones that just had like one basic function they were really good at. The ones that weren't over designed. So basically, there was that one that was just a flipper, wasn't it, on wheels?
Yeah.
And it just decimated its opponents. There was that one, and there was Hypno Disc, which was literally a disc sander on wheels, I think.
Yeah, and there was Razor, which was just a big claw. Like a downward.
It was funny because you
just
got
pierced through.
Yeah. Things. Because you've got all these people designing all these sort of really complex, beautifully designed robots, and they just like last 2 seconds against a disc sander.
Yeah. And then there's the one that was fluffy.
Everyone liked that. The pink fluffy one here. It used to catch on fire. Yeah, everyone liked that. I liked that one.
So if you can't be effective, be funny. It's the message.
Oh, it's what I go for as a teacher, that's for sure. Yeah.
Kind of at the end of that episode, we see that the teens in the 90s kind of were they were worried about Harold, and they wanted to make a plan to get Slappy away from him, and that's why they were in the house, and the fire happened accidentally, and they weren't trying
Harold
to.
Harold doesn't want to hear it, though.
Although, no.
He's very wedded to this narrative. Like, I do quite like that. Like, you have the narrative, and then there's a kind of pullback and reveal, and then the kids are all just like, what? So it sounds like our parents are trying to help you. They weren't killers at all. And he's like, why? No, you missed the entire point of the story.
Yeah, and also at the end, it's Brat reveals that he is being possessed by Harold Biddle.
And
like, how do you know all of this?
And then traps them within his journal.
Yeah.
So somehow they're trapped within. It's like the Page Master. They're trapped within a book.
So in the next episode, which is called "Give Yourself Goosebumps." So
that was the name, not of an individual Goosebumps book, but of all of the Choose Your Own Adventure Goosebumps books.
Yeah.
as a series.
Which were brilliant.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I think they're how Goosebumps should be enjoyed, to be honest.
Yeah. yeah.
And I was a bit disappointed that this episode wasn't interactive.
Mm.
Like that Black Mirror episode.
Yeah,
that is what I was hoping for.
Mm.
Or yeah. You know, or there could have at least been bits where, like in a sort of video board game, they address you as the viewer, like Slappy says, you know,
yeah,
I can see you watching. What's your name? And then you have to say your name, and Slappy says, "Oh, that's a stupid name." That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I did have I did hope for something more along those lines when I saw the episode title, but it's
yeah,
they're just trapped in a scrapbook.
Yeah, which is neat, but they don't do enough with the scrapbooky aesthetic. Like, they do have a kind of a page gets wet, the journal's dropped in a puddle, and then it starts to flood, and
yeah,
you know, another page gets crumpled and the walls start to crumple. Like, that's neat enough, but I guess we've done Paper House in this podcast before, and Paper House is very good at doing this, representing, like, drawings using live action and the kind of the odd dimensions of a child's drawing then being rendered.
Yeah.
Like, and
God, that must be one of our most referenced, like, points. Yeah, Paper House is really good.
Paper House is really good. It's totally underrated.
Mm. I agree. They didn't push it as far as it could have gone at all. They don't really seem like trapped in a sketchbook so much as just trapped in a house.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the teens and Brat. It turns out that Brat has been in the sketchbook all this time since being possessed, and so he's sort of resigned himself to there being no exit. But Isabella is convinced that she can see a light at the sort of bottom of the void that's outside the door, so they lower her down, and she's kind of in a version of the high school, which is like another page in the book, but then it kind of gets crumpled up, and sort of as this is going on, Brat kind of briefly becomes himself again in his body, because he realizes that pain lands him back in his body. So various teens are punching him in the face within their scrapbook reality to get him back in his body, but he's wrangling with Harold for possession of the body,
and of his own hand, which gives us a lot of Idle Hands style physical comedy with Justin Long, like, grappling with his own hand and sprawling about on the floor.
Yeah, Justin Long has a lot to do. I wasn't expecting it when we started this series, but he's
and he really gives it his all. I think Justin Long is one of the best things about this series, to be honest.
Yeah, he's really good.
He really throws himself into it.
It's a bit
of a transitional episode.
Yeah, it kind of feeds in, just sort of, leads into the next episode, where kind of Brat's still fighting with Biddle himself in the car park to kind of get to the pages of the sketchbook, but he eventually does and manages to draw the teens a crude exit, and the teens escape, but Brat gets thrown back into the sketchbook, and meanwhile Nora, who's Lucas's mum, who has been in the psychiatric ward because of the worms, if you remember the worms episode, she was
I do,
telling people that there was a giant people, there was a gigantic worm, and she was in a psychiatric ward, but she got out, and she's still on her kind of one woman crusade that something is not right, and she manages to get hold of Snappy.
Impressively, yeah.
Yeah.
And is that when she takes Slappy out to the log cabin?
Yeah. Yes. So I think
this episode's called You Can't Scare Me.
Yeah. What's that in reference to? Is that a Goosebumps book?
It is, and episode, and I have watched that one.
Oh.
It's pretty good, actually. Largely for a kind of horrible mud monster design that looks really nicely gloopy and melty. I wrote a few quick notes on it. It starts with a kind of old timey, like a very like compared to the new Goosebumps, which does very good kind of period specific flashbacks. This is a very nondescript, old timey sequence in which a grandpa's killed by the mud monster called Muddy. Yeah, no. The mud monster, I don't think he's got a name. The mud monster of Muddy Creek. Sorry, that's just me failing to read my own notes. And there's a really lovely kind of pullback and reveal where this opening sequence is then revealed to be a school report. given by this character called Courtney, who's sort of absolute inverse of the main character in The Haunted Mask, because in that the girl was scared of everything, whereas Courtney is scared of nothing, the idea is. And she's a sort of very preppy sort of grade A student, and as such she's hated by these two kind of ineffectual bullies, Eddie and Backwards Baseball Cap Kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they are determined to make Courtney scared of something. And so they try various pranks, such as instead of worms, it's a snake, I think, in her sandwich, this one. And she just says, oh, look, it's a grass snake. Oh, they're beautiful. They later get hold of a tarantula, and again, she says tarantulas are misunderstood and isn't scared at all. So they decide to trick her into investigating the woods and dressing up. One of them gets covered in mud, and they're going to pretend to be the mud monster of Muddy Creek. But what happens is, of course, the monster is actually real. And basically, the very silly twist is that Courtney is so unfazed by the monster that she just lectures it about its behaviour for such a long time that the monster then dries in the sun. So the poor monster is a bit like, I remember in the picture book episode we talked about Not Now Bernard, where that monster eats the kid Bernard, and then the parents just tell the monster off, and the last page is just the monster looking really sad and glum in bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. So this monster tries to be scary, and Courtney's just like, well, where do you think you're going to get yourself with behaviour like that? I know you're a monster, but you really ought to shape up. And basically, yeah, the monster dries out in the sun, and Courtney is hailed as a great hero. So has very little to do with the new episode. The only thing it takes from the original, well, it isn't even the setting actually, because it's very summery. The original one, which this is wintry. Well, it's very snowy, isn't it? You Can't Scare Me, the new episode. So the only thing it takes from the original is trees. There's a lot of trees in both.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your diligence.
Thanks.
Yeah,
well, I think it's a shame, actually, that there wasn't, because this series is so obsessed with Slappy, and Harold Biddle, but mostly Slappy. It means that in the second half we don't get many other monsters, basically.
No.
And I think that's a shame, because, you know, one of the best things about the Goosebumps books are the monsters.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to become so slappy focused. Although I guess we did have hints from how they talked about him in the first half.
Yeah.
Such ominous foreboding.
I don't know. I just thought that Harold Biddle could easily have like drawn a mud monster in his journal that comes alive or something, right?
Yeah, that would have made it like that would have given more stakes to, you know, the whole going up to the cabin in the woods to find. Well, yeah, the teens go to, they know that Nora's gone up to this cabin and they go to follow her because they realize that she's in danger. Well, all the brat. Well, I know that Harold kind of knows where she's going and that she has Slappy, and so they're sort of following her. But it starts to snow really heavily, and but you know, instead of that, I could have had a mud monster, which would have been cool.
Yeah, they just get kind of chased around by Slappy, basically, don't they?
Yeah, Slappy's disembodied head is talking to Nora. Oh, in the sketchbook, in the previous episode, just before the teens leave, they see Harold's parents, who are kind of they can't move on because of as Harold's still, you know, possessed by Slappy. So, in this episode, sort of at the end, Slappy gets thrown off a cliff,
and so Harold is freed from the possession.
Yeah, they managed to distract Harold at like the pivotal moment. He's about to kind of is it Isaiah's dad, is it, who's hanging off the cliff? Someone's hanging off the cliff, yeah. And
I think it's Isaiah, isn't it?
Is it? Oh yeah, no, it is, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Isaiah's hanging off the cliff. And Harold's about to sort of shove him off, and they manage to, I guess Margot distracts him by calling him Hair Bear, which is his parents' goofy nickname for him, and he's like, what? Like, oh, your parents, you know, your parents still love you, Harold, and they can't move on without you. So he throws off the possession of Slappy and twinkles away into the distance with his parents.
Well, yeah, he sort of turns back into kind of burnt Harold first. I noted that burnt Harold kind of looks like Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. All right. but yeah, that, as you say, then it becomes quite Christian, I suppose. Like they twinkle off together into the afterlife.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
It's kind of nice. Yeah. I'm always like a sucker for like sweet parents who are being beleaguered in some way. It always gets me. So I was like, oh.
And then I don't have any notes on the next episode, so it can't be very interesting.
Oh, okay. I have notes.
Okay, that's good.
I just rewatched it today, the last two. So the next episode is Night of the Living Dummy 2.
Oh, okay. I think I've just put them in a different order. Okay.
Okay.
So, Addy, you have actually read the original, you said.
Yeah, I read that. I read that this afternoon. So, the original Night of the Living Dummy 2 has a protagonist called Amy, whose family have a regular Thursday night family sharing night where they all have to share something that they've done or or learnt in the week, and she hates it.
Oh, but... yeah, yeah. Okay, so in the episode, there's one of the kids shows a video about their family's flaws, like the brother. And fascinatingly, the video is soundtracked to a funk remix of the Goosebumps theme tune.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, which poses all sorts of interesting questions, but it was also pretty epic. So, yeah, I enjoyed that.
There's mom sticking to her diet again. And dad's getting his hair just right. Here's how come Sarah hogs the bathroom so much. Jack, you're such a pain. Guess whose new sweater Amy's trying? You little geek!
Amy, where's your sense of humor?
Yeah, I could win a fortune on that fractured family video show.
How many times do I have to tell you not to try on my clothes?
That's not very nice. Next time, ask to use the camera.
Sorry. Now can I have my turn?
Yeah, so Amy has a ventriloquist dummy called Dennis, but his head falls off whenever she tries to use him. So, actually, her dad gets her a new dummy. And it's Slappy, and she finds a slip of paper with strange words written and reads them aloud and sees his little dummy eye wink. And then at the next family sharing night, Slappy insults Amy's family, and then her sister's like a painter, and she's like very talented, but he like messes up all the paint in her sister's room.
Yeah, that's in the episode. He's a bit of a bratty Slappy. This iteration of Slappery, so draws stick figures on the sister's painting,
which
is not particularly scary, but it's quite annoying.
Yeah, it's quite an irritating dummy, if not necessarily evil.
So he smashes the dad's guitar. Does he do that as well?
No.
Oh yeah, did that? It just smashes his guitar up.
Amy in the book is her friends is going to do a performance with Slappy at the friend's sort of family's restaurant for like a 3-year-old's birthday party.
Okay.
And then Slappy grabs the 3-year-old birthday girl's hand and won't let go. It's like crushing this small child's hand.
They have a scene similar to that in the episode, but they don't have it at a birthday party. That sounds quite good, or quite an effective setting for it.
Yeah, no, that bit was the most effective of getting across Slappy's menace, I thought. So Slappy sort of keeps doing horrible things and messing up the sister's paintings, and Amy keeps saying, it wasn't me, it was the dummy, and her parents won't believe her. I've got a description of... I'll save that for textures.
Oh, well, let's do textures. I think I'll do some gargling, because I haven't done that in a while.
Okay.
I'll try.
I'm going to jingle this cat ball.
Texture.
The cat was completely unbothered by me jingling the cat ball. She is asleep. So this is a description of Slappy slithering out of Amy's wardrobe and shuffling down the corridor to deface her sister's paintings. The heavy leather shoes slid over my carpet. The thin boneless legs nearly collapsed with each shuffling step. Like a scarecrow, I thought, gripped with horror. He walks like a scarecrow because he has no bones. No bones at all.
Ooh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Oh, R.L. Stine does pull it out of the bag sometimes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, actually, similar, the puppified faces. Which I think are quite good, actually, in the show. I particularly thought Lucas looked quite disturbing as a puppet.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was good. So Slappy kind of tells Amy that she's his slave now, and he'll keep destroying her family's things, and they'll send her away. But then Amy's sister reveals that she knew that it wasn't Amy, because she saw Slappy painting on her walls in the middle of the night, and they make a plan to defeat Slappy, involving like the parents hiding in the wardrobe so they see Slappy come into Sarah's room in the middle of the night. And then get attacked by Dennis, the former dummy.
Oh!
And Slappy's head splits in two and an enormous white worm wiggles out.
Ah!
Yeah.
That's pretty awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Slappy's head got smashed, but in the episode, what came out was much more ethereal than a worm. Like, you know, it's just some bad fog or something.
A worm. And then the twist at the end is it turned out that the little brother who was meant to dress up as Dennis the puppet overslept and missed his cue. And Amy's like, then who fought Slappy? Who fought Slappy? So that's Night of the Living Dummy too.
Which isn't the name of the episode, right? The episode's called Return of the Living Dummy. I think in the new series, but basically, it starts out as though we've Slappy thrown down an abyss. It starts out as though we've reached the end of the series and everything's sort of wrapping up nicely. Things are quite cathartic, but Mr. Bratt is trying to write has written a book about the preceding events, and is trying to get it sold, but his ending isn't very satisfactory. So it kind of leans into the metafictional episodes. Sorry, it kind of leans into the metafictional elements this episode. So clearly, Goosebumps can't finish season one without upping the ante. And so Mr. Bratt decides that he better bring Slappy back in order to reach a more satisfying conclusion.
He's written a very thinly veiled account of what happened in the series so far, with everyone having very similar but slightly different names, of which Harold Boodle was my favourite. Bratt is kind of not doing too well mentally, I think it's fair to say, from having been possessed by Harold Biddle for the last several months and living in a sketchbook.
And he's really lonely.
And he wants to be friends with all the teens' parents, and they're a bit like, all right, mate. He listens to a podcast about writing that says that a story needs a twist. So he kind of talks himself into finding Slappy at the bottom of the cliff.
As voiced by R.L. Stine.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure that the podcast interview is with the real R.L. Stine.
Oh, okay, that's pretty good.
Which I thought was, a pretty nice Easter egg. And R.L. Stine does indeed like his twists.
He does. Meanwhile, the teens, it's not a particularly interesting plot, but the teens are in Seattle.
I was literally about to say, like, oh, do we need to talk about that?
Yeah, they're in Seattle because Margot's mum is like, oh, Margot, maybe you should move to Seattle. and she's having some feelings about it, which is fine.
And like, I don't know, they're so wholesome, and that's not, you know, maybe it's probably good that, you know, the teen characters on TV are more wholesome than they used to be in our day, but like, you know, I'm not saying they should do anything awful, but, you know, I put Bubbles in a fountain once, and I felt really bad about it afterwards. You know, I'm not saying this was a great moment.
I swam in a fountain once.
Well, that exactly, and I just feel like, you know, I appreciate that, you know, that Zoomers today have a lot of time to spend on TikTok in the most part, and so that doesn't leave so much spare time for antics, but I don't know. To be fair, Lucas gets up to antics in the first half of the series, but I suppose after his traumatic encounter with a worm monster,
with worms,
he seems to have left his dangerous antics behind him.
Yeah, he seems quite bereft without his antics.
Yeah, I don't think he knows who he is without his antics, to be honest.
No.
So all the kids are pretty glum, basically.
But Brat kind of ends the episode. He's by reading the slappy spell out that his great grandfather didn't go through with all those years ago. He sees this burning spiral tower. But he's like, well, that's probably fine. And
he's like, pretty exciting ending for my book.
Yeah, and Slappy's spirits. He's also grave robbed a body.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's dug up a corpse, and Slappy's spirit goes back into this corpse of his original form before he was a dummy.
Oh, and Brat's old dog is also revived.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, Brat's poodle.
Which I thought was a nice kind of reference to Pet Sematary, because there's... because there's a few kind of Stephen King references in this episode. Like, Brat wants to be, like his publisher says, he's going to be the next Stephen King.
Yeah.
So I thought this seemed to me to be a very deliberate Pet Sematary reference, basically, to get some Stephen King in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So next we have Welcome to Horrorland. Which again is a original Goosebumps book, doesn't have anything to do with this one. I
was pretty disappointed by that, I'm gonna be honest. Like,
yeah.
I really like Welcome to Horrorland, the original.
Yeah.
And I think the Choose Your Own Adventure Horrorland book is really peak Goosebumps.
It is, isn't it? It's what I think of. I think of going down that infinite slide forever. You know?
Yeah! Yeah, that is one of R.L. Stine's greatest ideas, the infinite death slide.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I've spent a lot of time thinking about that. Like, you know, do you pass others in various states of decay as you go down? Like, are you all sliding at the same velocity? Or does it depend on how fast you enter the death slide? Because if so, like, do you end up like going past skeletons? Are you like slowly starving while sliding, basically?
Yeah. Or like, do you like? Could you like accelerate your death by like tumbling and hitting your head?
Ah, that's awful. But yeah. Or do you just slide forever? Like, is it like limbo? And that it is like just purgatory, and you don't die, and you just slide forever, which is possibly even worse.
Yeah, yeah, it's real food for thought, that one.
So the original Horrorland is just like an evil theme park run by monsters, which is a great idea, and like, you know, definitely.
Yeah.
Like as a kid, I loved this one. And, you know, it's just perfect for children's horror, because you can take rides and then just create evil or super dangerous versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, like the teacups, but what if the tea is scalding hot?
Yeah. Yeah, and a Hall of Mirrors, obviously.
Yeah, but when you look into the mirror and you get the long neck, when you walk out, that's what you actually look like.
So did you watch an episode? Was there an original episode?
There is an episode. I didn't rewatch it because I actually watched it fairly recently, or in the last few years for some reason.
Okay.
Definitely in living memory. There's the bit that I remember being most well done is there's a kind of lazy river ride in which they have to ride in coffins with the lids shut on them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
And you get to see these coffins floating down the river, which is a really nice image. And actually, I thought one reason I was disappointed is this episode starts with a kind of flashback to what I thought at first must be the American Civil War, but then I thought, actually, I don't think the dates line up. So it seems to be some kind of conflict abroad. Like, I don't know, you know, if this is meant to be part of the sort of scramble for Africa or some other kind of colonial.
Yeah, I think like that. I mean, it's deliberately vague, but I feel like that's probably makes the most sense of locating it. It's in an ambiguously foreign land.
Yeah. And it has a kind of American Horror Story aesthetic. And basically the character... did you want to describe what happens at the start of the episode?
Yeah, so this is the backstory of, Slappy, or the person that he was before Slappy, and he's a soldier and he's wounded and he kind of stumbles into a cavern and finds this writing on the wall. And when he sort of sounds out these words, it heals his wound. And he takes his name from one of the words that he reads, which is Kandu. He then becomes a kind of renowned... Well, not a magician. He objects to being called a magician, but a magical man.
It's like Job in Arrested Development. I'm an illusionist, Michael.
he goes to a carnival and meets another ancestor of Nathan Bratt, who is the original creator of the Slappy puppet.
I was quite optimistic at this point, to be honest, because I was like, okay, we've got an old-timey carnival. That's great. Mm. I really enjoyed that. Not only that, we've got a carnival run by a puppet maker who seems to want to have a carnival based around puppetry. Now,
amazing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, that's wholly in my wheelhouse. You know, let's just set the whole episode in the puppet carnival. It doesn't do that. Mm. Like, why wouldn't you set the episode in the puppet carnival?
Yeah, why would you tease us with the concept of a puppet carnival and then absolutely not go there in any way?
Seriously, it's like that bit in The Simpsons where they're doing like audience response, like test screenings of Itchy and Scratchy. Don't know if you remember this one. The kids like end up watching an episode of Itchy and Scratchy and they have to sort of vote on whether they like it or not. I think it's when they first introduced like Poochie to the show or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there's going to be an episode where they go to the fireworks factory. And, like, you see, like, Milhouse, like, go, come on, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory? and then right at the end of the episode, I think Poochie and Itchy and Scratchy drive off in a car and they just, like, pass the fireworks factory on the side of the road. That's totally out. That's going, okay, when are we going to get the puppet carnival? We did not get the puppet carnival. I was not happy.
No, I was very sad. instead we get we get Lucas sadly coming back to Port Lawrence because he's sad. And his dad appears, his dad who died, saying that, oh, I'm not dead, son. I just had to go into witness protection. And Lucas is like, okay. But when Lucas touches him, it's Kandu, and Lucas is puppetized. And so that the people of the town are being turned into puppets. The rest of the teens sort of turn up and chase puppet Lucas so they don't realize he's a puppet. And then their puppet parents pull them out of the car. And there's this big wooden spiral structure that's
Yeah, exactly, right? You're like, okay, well, this is good because we've got to the puppet carnival. There's a big helter-skelter. Yeah, okay, not the most exciting ride, but sure, we've got a helter-skelter. Obviously, all of these people have been turned into puppets because they're going to staff the puppet carnival, right? They're the equivalents to the monsters in the Horrorland episode. Great. Now what's going to happen is, yeah, we've only got like 15 minutes left. All right. What's going to happen now is that the teens are going to be forced to go on all sorts of horrible rides.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why didn't they do that? Like, come on. Like, that's such an easy win.
Yeah. Yeah. And instead we get Kandu's kind of weird villain speech where he's like, oh, you see, people need monsters or they become the monsters themselves. So I'm going to release all of the supernatural monsters by performing the ritual of the spire, which is this helter skelter.
Yeah. It's like his version of the Wicker Man, basically.
Yeah. Okay. And then this bit happens that like, I truly do not understand what happened in this episode. And, like, I've had COVID. I'm recovering from COVID. So the first time I watched it, I was just like, oh, well, I have COVID. Like, clearly this will make more sense if I watch it again. But I watched it again today and it didn't make any more sense.
Okay. Well, I warn you that my note says, gets quite high concept. It generally suggests I haven't understood something. So, okay.
So the teens and Brat bring back Brat's ancestor, Franz, the original, the puppeteer, the carnival puppeteer, who originally transformed Kandu into Slappy. Okay. Yeah. And Franz says he's not going to stop Kandu. He's going to help him. Yes. And they set alight to the spire and all the townspeople. But then Kandu turns into a puppet and the spire isn't on fire and Franz isn't there anymore. And I have no idea what happened.
Does one of the plucky teens like read something from the spell book?
Well, she does after that.
I thought maybe she read something from it twice. I mean, you know.
Oh, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess.
I think maybe like a page from the screenplay got lost. Because it does feel like
it genuinely feels like that.
It feels like you lose like 5 minutes, like you just suddenly jump forwards. You're like, what?
Yeah. It's like, what? What is happening?
Yeah.
Because Franz was there, and then he's not there, and the people are on fire, and they're not on fire, and like I don't understand. So I found that quite upsetting.
That's understandable, because it is a bit like if you're watching a film and then you just suddenly fallen asleep and then you've woken back up.
Yeah.
Except neither of us fell asleep. I mean, we could have done. It could be a coincidence, but I think it's unlikely. Maybe we were both so disappointed, right, by the lack of a puppet carnival, we just kind of blacked out in disappointment.
Maybe we both had a simultaneous disappointment blackout, and I had one twice because I was that disappointed.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, let's go with that as an explanation. Okay. they kind of Margot finds the spell that like undoes the spell that like saved his life at the beginning of the episode, and so it so it undoes every spell that Candu's ever cast. And but he briefly becomes a soldier again, and he shoots Isaiah because that boy can't catch a break.
Yeah, and like that doesn't make sense, right? Like, surely that'd be how I don't understand. Like, how does that? Okay, so it undoes it to the point that he's. That surely, like, he couldn't have got to that point in the future without the magic. Like, surely he should just, like, disappear. And, like,
yeah.
Be back where he originally was, but dead. And, like, but then I guess what would happen then
Why
is
does
that...
he have a functioning firearm?
Like, and is it some kind of ghost gun?
Ghost gun.
Ghost gun.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. But anyway, the upshot is it. Everyone apart from poor old Isaiah is saved. Because he's definitely the puppy to be kicked in this series for some reason.
Some reason. Yeah, the townspeople snap to and they leave the helter-skelter. They're like, well, that's a bit weird. And then Isaiah's in hospital and they're like, oh, there's no chance of saving him. And Margot reads a spell, another spell, to revive him. And then Mr. Brat looks in the mirror and sees Candu smirking at him and says, oh no, not again. And that's the
end of the series. Yeah, I think the last episode doesn't really stick the landing, to be honest.
No. That didn't make much sense, and it didn't have a puppet carnival. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely Welcome to Horrorland wins. The original Welcome to Horrorland wins that battle of the episode. So I think overall it's pretty 50-50, actually. I think the original Goosebumps has won as many as the new Goosebumps when I've trotted up the scores. So.
Oh, yeah, which one, Night of the Living Dummy 2?
I don't know, possibly the new one. I mean, the original is pretty naff, basically. It's not very good. But, you know, as I've said, there are some great episodes of the original, and I do mean that, like, not just, like, ironically. Like, the original Haunted Mask is a really nice piece of children's horror, for instance. Like, I genuinely was impressed
I still need to watch it. I will watch it.
It's really good. Mm. So, you know, I do think that they both have their charms. Like, I don't think the new one is as spooky as it could be. It could be more fun as well. It takes itself a bit seriously at times.
Yeah.
Which is odd, because it's Goosebumps.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I do think it's pretty well plotted. You know, I do like some of the intrigue.
Yeah, I think...
It's very watchable.
Yeah, it's definitely very watchable. The cast do a good job. Justin Long is particularly good. Putting his whole self into the character of Mr. Brat.
I wonder if it would be different had Stranger Things not existed. Although maybe this wouldn't have even happened if it weren't for Stranger Things. or Sabrina, right? Like, it very much feels like some TVXX have noticed that Sabrina and Riverdale, Stranger Things, that these things are successful, and like, right, okay, let's try to do the same with Goosebumps. But I think the problem with that is it never quite knows. Okay, so with like the Sabrina reboot, I guess it's like a complete about face, as much as the original show is a comedy, right? It's not meant to be horror at all. Like, it's, you know, it's a daft kid sitcom. So it's like, okay, we're just taking the basic premise. I don't really know about the comics, but I think they're much the same. you know, they're very light and humorous. So it's like, okay, we take this thing and then we just kind of make it grim dark. And that works surprisingly well. I think maybe the issue is that with Goosebumps, obviously the original Goosebumps, it is horror. It's just for younger children. So it's basically, okay, how do we kind of age up Goosebumps, make it appealing for older teenagers and also the millennials who grew up with the original Goosebumps?
Mm.
And I think that's quite a difficult balancing act, to be honest. Like, that's quite a hard thing to achieve. And I think it does to an extent. Like, I think tonally, it's pretty well judged. Like, it doesn't feel cringy.
Mm.
Like, you know, I feel like the kind of Zoomer characters feel pretty convincing. I mean, I might be wrong, but to me, they felt pretty well written. And, you know, the references for us millennials were quite good. And, like, there's nothing really wrong with it. Like, it is pretty good. I guess I just kind of, I basically wanted it to be goofier, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just wanted it to have a little bit more fun with being Goosebumps.
Mm. And I get the impression that the films do, and we haven't watched or talked about the Jack Black films.
Oh, okay, no.
And, you know, maybe we should do them at some point, because I get the impression that maybe they are goofier. So, I would still generally recommend this series. I just don't know who I'd recommend it to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, yeah. I'm not mad about having watched it. It was quite enjoyable, but it was a bit of an odd prospect. Could have done with less of the interpersonal drama.
Yes, agreed. But yeah, no, I don't. It's not something that, you know, it's not the Water Babies. I don't dislike the fact that it exists.
No. I would love to see a high production values Puppet Carnival, though.
I know, like, I don't know, that seems like, you know, people talk about, oh, where are the flying cars and so on. I feel like, where are the puppet carnivals? It's like, come on, it's 2024. I should be able to, like, go out on a night and go, right, I'm off to the puppet carnival.
Yeah.
That should be a viable option. That's not too much to ask.
Yeah. All right, my cat has woken up, so I think that means it's over.
right. Let's have you told the listeners the name of your cat?
Oh, yes, this is my cat. My cat is called Gretchen. Yes, she's just woken up. She's making lots of little Gretchy noises, as she likes to do. That sort of thing.
Nice.
Yeah. Our intro music is by Maki Yamazaki. Our outro music's by Joe Kelly. Artwork's by Letty Wilson. I have links to their various things in the show notes. You can email us at stillscaredpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at Still Scared Podcast.
Oh, yeah, Ren's been making collages. So
I've been making collages for each episode, yeah. So you can see those on Instagram.
I'm looking forward to your Puppet Carnival collage.
Yeah, oh, yeah, amazing. And you can... do you have a sign-off for us, Adam?
Yeah, don't take away your teacher's puppet, creepy kids. If your teacher has a puppet, let them enjoy the Puppet Carnival.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. All right. See you next time, Bye. Kids. Bye.
Bye.